Good evening, everybody. Mike Malloy here. Welcome to tonight's program. Thanks for tuning in. Within the past couple of hours, legislation to extend unemployment subsidies for hundreds of thousands of Americans who have exhausted their jobless benefits, that legislation has been thrown in the toilet by the Republicans. The vote in the Senate was 57 to 41. Every single Republican voted no to extend unemployment benefits. Every single Republican. Now, if you are, you know, sometimes it's just so hard to sit here and talk about this stuff. It really is. Because, you know, I don't know. It just makes me want to strangle somebody. It really does. I mean, I can't believe that every single Republican decided that people in this country who don't have a job are now going to be cut off of any kind of extension. What in the goddamn hell do these Republicans expect people to do? Well, the quick answer, they don't care. This is the party of corporate America. This is a party of these teabag bastards. They don't care. So that's just the way it goes. It was all paid for, too, by the way. The Democrats had found ways to cover the entire cost of this measure, which would have cost $112 billion to go into the economy through the hands of working families. Okay? Not tax breaks for these filthy, stinking capitalist pigs in D.C. I'm sorry, in New York. Not them. Working class people. $112 billion. It was all paid for with the exception of the $35 billion extension of unemployment benefits, which some Republicans said they could accept. $1.2 million Americans will lose their jobless benefits by the end of this month. And what is going to happen to these families is, I don't know. I can't imagine. Kathy and I were on unemployment benefits here in Georgia twice, when she was pregnant for Molly, a little over 6 years ago, and then when Air America fired us. And here in Georgia, the maximum benefit per person is $300 per week. We both qualify. So we had $600 a week coming in. That's $2,400 a month. And had it not been for that $2,400, I have no idea how we would have paid our mortgage. I have no idea how we would have made our car payment. Sure, we had a few bucks put aside. But you never want to touch that. You know what I'm saying? Had it not been for unemployment, and here's the rub. Here's the rub. Unemployment compensation. until the worker no longer qualifies, until he or she exhausts the 52 weeks or 26 weeks, whatever it is. That's not tax money. That's not tax money. I don't care what this pig bastard Glenn Beck or these teabagger thugs, what they say. It's not tax money. Employers contribute into a fund. Right now, with our little Malloy Broadcasting, employees, two, Kathy and me, we pay into the state of Georgia's unemployment compensation fund. So the Republicans stick it to the working class again and again and again and again. Well, I stick by what I say. Yeah, you remember Jim Bunning? Remember that pig bastard, the Republican senator from Kentucky? Remember he complained the last time when he was holding up the legislation. He complained because it interfered with his watching a Kentucky basketball game. And this loss, this legislation lost by a vote of 57 to 41. 41 said no. So the Democrats didn't have the 60 votes to move on. This was a cloture vote. And since they didn't have the 60 votes, that killed it right there. Ben Nelson of Nebraska, the Democrat, voted with these Republican swine to say to working people who are desperate in this country, go screw yourselves. How many families now with kids going into first, second, third, fourth, fifth grade are not going to have money to buy their kids clothing? I mean, I can go right down the list, and I don't want to get maulden about any of this, but what do you people need to understand that Republicans hate your goddamn guts? What do you need? What do you need? What does it take? Well, I stick by my original position the other night. I hope the Republican Party wins everything in the next election. Everything. I want every governorship to be Republican. Every state legislature be Republican. The House, the Senate, the presidency. Let's just go for it. Turn it over to these Nazi bastards. Let's do it. And in doing that, this country will collapse. It will absolutely collapse. And then we can get about the business of trying to rebuild it. I hope they all win. And I hope most of the Republicans that win are these teabag bastards. I just hope that that happens. Will it be rough? Yeah, it'll be rough. Will there be blood in the streets? Yes, there will be blood in the streets. Will there be an awful lot of anguish? Yes, it'll be monumental. But we've gone through this before, twice in the history of this country, and we need perhaps to go through it again. We need to purge this country of Republicans and conservatives, and the only way to do that is give them the power. I know what you're thinking. Well, once they get the power, Mike, then they'll never relinquish it. Of course not. That's when it will be taken from them. It's that simple. If you think that 300 million people in this country are going to do nothing while unemployment continues to skyrocket, their kids can't be fed, their houses continue to be lost, they can't get financing, they can't get a loan. If you think that's going to continue, you're mistaken. People will survive. And if in order to survive, they have to declare open season on the filthy, disgusting Republican Party. Open political season, you little rat bastard right-wingers. If that's the case, then that's what will happen. So I hope that the American people will just take a look at this and just say, okay, you guys have made it very clear. Democrats, you know, you do what you want to do, but perhaps it's time to stop dicking around with this voting system we have in this country that is meaningless. It is pointless to go in there and push on that damn touchscreen voting. Are you going to do that again in the next election in your precinct? Are you going to do it? If you do it, you're a fool. You're just an utter fool. And maybe you deserve to have this country run by Nazis for a while to see how bad it can get. I don't know. I know what I'm going to do. We'll be back after the break. I have some bad news for you. Well, I guess it won't be bad news to everybody, unless you believe John Donne's poem that no man's death, every man's death diminishes me. This happens to be a woman. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Past the hour. I guess you heard the story of the charter boat captain committed suicide in Gulf Shores, Alabama. As the LA Times reports it, the immense difficulties facing workers trying to contain and clean up the Gulf of Mexico oil leak were made frighteningly evident after a charter captain, despondent over the oil spill, apparently committed suicide. And technical issues forced BP to remove the cap, collecting some of the oil, sending thousands more barrels of crude gushing into the Gulf. The apparent suicide of the 55-year-old fishing captain, William Allen Rookie Cruz, was a grim reminder of the mental health toll that may haunt the Gulf region for years. And there's more here. In watching one of the newscasts this evening or today, I forget which, statistics were shared that show, you know, this always happens, doesn't it? Domestic abuse is way up. Violence is way up. Alcoholism up. How does BP compensate for that? I got an email about the charter boat captain suicide from Skepta Carpenter. How's that for a name? In Biloxi, Mississippi. Hey, Mike. The charter boat captain is the latest fatality of BP. Some people invest everything in a dream, assuming the risks of any business venture. Boat notes, repairs. And the setbacks to natural environment will inevitably put forth slow fishing season, hurricanes. Then a multinational corporation with the ultimate goal of maximizing profits to shareholders comes along and craps all over your livelihood for what could be a lifetime. So with no way out, this man decided life was over. For many here on the Gulf Coast, the sea has been the fabric of life for generations of folks here. Fishing, shrimping are not just a job to them. It is who they are, their first love. When they lose this, they lose who they are. Can this be compensated with money? Skeptic Carpenter. No, it can't. And I guess you heard what BP is planning for... Where is this? What they're planning for offshore drilling off the coast of Alaska. I mean, this is astonishing. It's unbelievable. I open up the Times this morning and see this. About 3 miles off the coast of Alaska, BP is moving ahead with a controversial and potentially record-setting project to drill 2 miles under the sea, drill down 2 miles under the sea, and then horizontally 6 to 8 miles to reach what is believed to be a 100 million barrel reservoir of oil under federal waters. All other new projects in the Arctic have been halted by this offshore drilling moratorium, including more traditional projects like Shell Oil's plan to drill 3 walls in the Chukchi Sea and 2 in the Beaufort Sea. But BP's project, it's called Liberty, has been exempted as regulators have granted its status as an onshore project, even though it is about 3 miles off the coast into the Beaufort Sea. Now, how does that? Well, BP built an artificial island, a 31-acre pile of gravel in about 22 feet of water. They built an island! Of course, to get to it, it's 2 or 3 miles off the coast. The project has already received its state and federal environmental permits. BP has yet to file its final application to federal regulators to begin drilling, which it expects to start in the fall. Rather than conducting their own independent analysis, by the way, federal regulators, in a break from usual practice, allowed BP in 2007 to write its own environmental review for the project, as well as its own consultation documents relating to the Endangered Species Act. Yada, 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 yada. Let's see, 2007. Oh, that's right. That was the cyborg rat bastard Dick Cheney. That's right. Okay. Oh, is it time for a break? All right, we'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. Step out. I said we've been looking for illegal immigrants. Yeah, we'll check your car. Say it's funny, I think we were on the same boat back in 1694. And I said,
up America one flying monkey at a time. It's more Mike Malloy.
Twenty-five before the hour. Just so you know about this, what BP is doing in Alaska. Again, rather than conducting their own independent analysis, federal regulators allowed BP in 2007 to write its own environmental review. They're going to drill down from this little island they made, 33-acre island, 31-acre island. It's a pile of gravel in about 22 feet of water. Think about that. They're going to drill down 2 miles and then slant drill another 7 or 8 into this little pocket of oil that they say exists. Anyway, in 2007, BP wrote its own environmental review for the entire project, as well as its own consultation documents relating to the Endangered Species Act. That's according to two scientists from the Alaska Office of the Federal Mining Management Service that oversees drilling. The environmental assessment was taken away from the agency's unit that typically handles such reviews and put in the hands of a different division that was more pro-drilling, said the scientists, and then, of course, turned over to the company altogether. One of the scientists said this whole process for approving Liberty was bizarre. Really? The scientists and other critics say they are worried about a replay of the disaster in the Gulf of Mexico because the Liberty Project involves a method of drilling called extended reach that experts say is more prone to the types of gas kicks that triggered the explosion on the Deepwater Horizon. They're gonna do an even more risky venture that could result in exactly the same result. Rebecca Noblin, the Alaska director for the Center for Biological Diversity and Environmental Watchdog Group, said, quote, "It makes no sense. BP pushes the envelope in the Gulf and ends up causing the moratorium. And now in the Arctic, they're forging ahead again with untested technology. And as a result, they're the only ones being allowed to drill there." Son of a bitch. BP has defended the project in its proposal, saying it is safe and environmentally friendly. It declined to respond to requests for further comment to the New York Times. Extended reach drilling. Engineers say that this type of drilling is riskier and more complicated than traditional drilling because it is relatively new and gas kicks are more frequent and tougher to detect. And because of the distance and the angles involved, drilling requires far more powerful machinery, putting extra pressure on pipes and well casings. God damn. They just want to kill us all, don't they? All this for profit. Several companies, it says here, have built artificial islands to drill offshore in the Arctic and elsewhere, in part because surging ice flows can destroy conventional floating or metal-legged offshore drilling platforms. Oh, well, maybe that's nature's way of saying stay the hell out! Critics say these little islands are so tiny that a large oil spill will quickly flow into the surrounding water. Really? My goodness. I mean, the island is 31 acres. The Liberty Field, the oil that they're going to drill into, lies about 5 miles under the shallow waters of the Beaufort Sea in an area populated during the winter by seals and polar bears. Goodbye! Goodbye, Seelu! Hey, seals and polar bears, don't watch TV! You'll see all these dead animals! Ah! During the summer, bowhead whales migrate through the region. Goodbye, bowhead whales! Goodbye! We can always go to the aquarium and see, pictures of you! BP in 2007 wrote this in the proposal to federal regulators. The overall Liberty Project has been planned and designed to minimize adverse effects in biological resources. Impacts to wetlands have been significantly reduced, including shoreline and tundra habitat for birds and caribou. Oh, yeah, let's not forget the birds and the caribou. We're going to let this happen, aren't we? Of course we are. Because we're Americans. We have learned to be helpless. We are going to sit back on our asses and we are going to do nothing. Nothing. The federal scientists say that BP should never have been allowed to do environmental reviews. That's the responsibility of the regulators. The language of the environmental consequences section of the final 2007 federal assessment and BP's own assessment submitted earlier the same year are virtually identical, which means that BP wrote both. Officials from the Minerals Agency declined to answer questions about the handling of the BP's environmental assessment, but they added, quote, "In light of the BP oil spill in the Gulf and new safety requirements, we will be reviewing the adequacy of the current version of the Liberty Project spill plan." Well, that's reassuring. In promotional materials, BP acknowledges that the Liberty Project will push the boundaries of drilling technology. Oh, yes. To reduce weight on the rig, BP has developed a new steel alloy for the drill pipe. Oh, goody! So much force, you see, is needed to power a drill over such long distances that BP had to invest more than, $200 million to have a company build what it describes as the largest land rig in the world. Bigger, faster, deeper! The drill's top drive is rated at 105,000 foot-pounds of torque, while most rigs that operate in this environmentally delicate part of planet Earth are usually rated at 40,000 foot-pounds. This one is 105,000 foot-pounds. Gary Christman, BP's director of Alaska Drilling and Wells, told Petroleum News in 2007, quote, "It will take all of this technology that we've developed and exploited in Prudhoe Bay and extend it to a new realm," end quote. Engineers say that realm includes greater risk. Oh, come on. Don't be a wuss. Hey, we got to have the oil. John Cho, an expert in extended reach drilling and director of the Department of Energy Resources at Seoul National University, I guess that would be in Korea, said that it was less safe than conventional types of drilling because gas kicks that can turn into blowouts are tougher to detect as they climb more slowly toward the rig. Well, yeah, because they have 5 miles to go virtually horizontal. Mr. Cho said, quote, "So you may not detect it until it becomes serious. In that case, the kick or drilling-related problems become too big to be managed easily. And as BP has shown us, they become too big to be managed at all." And a 2004 study commissioned by the Minerals Management Service came to the same conclusion. That study said, quote, "A gas kick represents probably the most dangerous situation that can occur when drilling a well, since it can easily develop to a blowout if it is not controlled promptly." Well, if your executives are all on the drilling platform and they're all goddamn drunk, what do you think will happen? Well, take a look at the Gulf of Mexico and you will know exactly what can happen. It's what has happened.
Despite these concerns, the Liberty's 614-page environmental assessment says nothing about how the project would handle the unique risks posed by this type of drilling.
Well, of course not. Why? So, look, you know, Dick Cheney gave us permission to do anything we wanted to do. That's all we're doing. We're just being good Americans. Jesus. 2 weeks after the Obama administration declared a moratorium on offshore drilling on May 27, BP announced that the Liberty Project would continue. Did you hear that? 2 weeks after the moratorium is announced, BP said, no, not for us. We'll just continue. Now, go away, move on, nothing to see here. With drilling scheduled to start in the fall, generating its first oil production by 2011, by 2013, BP estimates, Liberty will yield 40,000 barrels of oil per day. And you know what? You know what the American people are going to do about this? Nothing. We are going to sit here with our mouths and our eyes shut tight. That's what we're going to do. Doesn't that make you proud?
to listen to Right Wing Radio. Here's Mike Malloy.
It's about 9 before the hour. I've got some sad news to share with people who are regular listeners of this program and have been for a number of years. Marge Vedic died last night. Marge, for those of you who are regular listeners, you would hear me answer the phone. Marge is calling from northern Indiana. Maryville, Indiana. And we got an email from her son this morning. Kathy, where did I put that? And the email said simply that she died in her sleep. That her death was not related to the last thing that put her in the hospital, which was the foot infection. And we have put up at our website a link that her son, RJ, it's a memorial where you can post a comment if you want to go there. Is it up at our website now? You can go to MikeMalloy.com, and I would ask the Republicans and the right-wingers who send me vicious emails about my wife and my daughter, please don't mess this one up. Just let it be. Just this one time. This is for someone else. It's not for me. If you want to insult Kathy and I the way you do, go ahead. I mean, we're used to it. Molly, of course, our soon-to-be six-year-old, never reads your garbage. But this will be a public forum. So you right-wingers, you Republicans, you teabaggers, I'm just going to ask you, don't. RJ also sent this. Some quotes for the passing of a good and great lady. First from Molly Ivins. Molly Ivins said, "In every single day, every single one of us needs to raise hell. Think of something to make the ridiculous look ridiculous." Molly Ivins, of course, was one of Marge's, I don't want to say hero, but someone that Marge respected. And then Linda Ellerbee, some of you will remember her. Linda Ellerbee said, "I've always felt that laughter in the face of reality is probably the finest sound there is and will last until the day when the game is called on account of darkness. In this world, a good time to laugh is any time you can." And then RJ writes, and then last but never least, my mom used to say, "Give 'em hell, Tiger." So, to Marge Vedic, who is 75 years old, not so much rest in peace, but have a great time wherever the next stop on your ride actually is. I love you, Mom. RJ. We're just sorry to hear that. I mean, I never met Marge, ever. And yet we had a 12-year relationship. It was more than that. It was about a 14-year relationship with her, starting when we went to work at WLS in Chicago. Didn't know a soul. Moved into Chicago. Nobody at WLS was very friendly. "Oh, you that liberal from Georgia, huh? You." It took a while for you know, people to get familiar with our program. But Marge, from the get-go, I think she listened one night. And well, I guess we had voicemail back then. Marge never had a computer, never used email or anything. But the next day, I think the second day I was there, I got a voicemail from someone named Marge with that distinctive sound to her voice saying something about welcome to Chicago or something, and an immediate comment on something that I had said the night before, and surprisingly in total agreement. And for the next decade and a half on this crazy ride that Kathy and I've been on professionally, you know, from ABC, WLS to IE America to Air America to Nova M to being self-employed, Marge was one of several constants. I mean, there've been a number of people stuck with us for the whole thing, but Marge was just, you know, Marge is unique. If you're a regular listener to this program, you know that she was unique. So anyway, for anybody who cares, and I don't mean that in a snarky way. I'm just saying, for anyone who cares, there is a link at our website where you can post a comment for her son to read, RJ. And if I'm not mistaken, RJ's probably her only surviving, I think so, her only surviving family member. I don't think it was a very big family to begin with. And, of course, the years always take their toll. So to Marge Vadik, it was really nice knowing you. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy. Let's have a report from Prairie 2, our economic affairs correspondent, who always has such uplifting news to report. Just kidding. Bruce writes, the 73% factor. There were a lot of new economic numbers released this week, all bad. Weekly unemployment claims were down marginally, but is still far above the number that would indicate jobs were being created. One bright spot. Ford is spending $500 million to build a new car plant. Oh, wait, the plant is being built in Thailand. Toyota has decided to finish building a plant in Mississippi that was suspended early in the recession. That would be a good thing, except they closed their plant in California first, which was their only unionized facility in the United States. The new president of the UAW says it will be the top priority to unionize the U.S. plants of foreign car makers. Then they can unionize the U.S. companies. New hires for a number of years now have been getting half pay or less, with no prospect of an increase. These are in the American car companies. The manufacturers are just waiting for the union to age out, the union members to age out, and then they can cancel their pensions and nobody will go on strike about it. There was a sharp decline in existing home sales, although the number was higher than a year ago. The truth is, half of those were distressed sales. The bank buying a house it has a loan on from the sheriff auction counts as a sale. New home sales dropped by a third from April to a new record low, and home prices are falling from the glut of empty houses on the market and a lack of loan money. It would be worse, but banks are holding a lot of foreclosed homes in inventory. One of the biggest problems is there has been a shortfall in small business lending of nearly $1 trillion. The Fed has been encouraging banks to deposit their money with the Fed at interest rather than using it to lend to small business. This makes the Fed's books look better, and it keeps inflation under control if there is a shortage of funds in the lending market. At least that's the excuse. The Fed announced this week that they will continue to lend money to the large banks and bank-like corporations, and these unlimited funds will be lent at near zero interest into the indefinite future. This allows the 25 largest banks to make hundreds of billions doing proprietary trading. This should keep the market up. But it fell today anyway. If you're a small business and you can't get a loan, you can sell apples on the corner to raise money. Congressional Oversight Panel Chairman Elizabeth Warren has had several heated run-ins with Obama's Treasury Secretary over several economic issues. For one thing, only 1% of eligible mortgages have been restructured under the program Obama touted as solving the mortgage crisis. She has also taken him to task over the looming commercial mortgage crisis. With the 50% decline in commercial property values, there is several trillion in equity disappearing from the portfolios of U.S. banks because of the drop in the value of commercial property. Ms. Warren says, by the bank's own standards, which are questionable, there are 3,000 of the 8,000 U.S. banks that are in real danger of failure as these five-year commercial loans all need to be refinanced in the next 3 years. Oh, the latest poll says that 73% of Americans think things are going badly with the economy. Other than the 1% at the top, the rest didn't understand the question. PrairieNumeral2.com. You might want to visit his website if you're so inclined, right? Joe writes, Mike, every year Congress authorizes hundreds of billions of dollars of supplemental war funding. Most of the money goes to corrupt foreign governments and defense contractors. The $35 billion to extend unemployment benefits to Americans that was just defeated by the Republicans is minuscule compared to the amount of money we spend on wars and banker bailouts. Do you suppose Republicans will vote down the next $120 billion supplemental war funding bill? Joe. I don't think so, Joe. From Ben. Who writes, well, it's official. Million-year-old Pensacola beaches are being destroyed. You know, Pensacola vies with St. Augustine as being the oldest town in the United States. How is Obama-rama and BP going to ever be able to make that right? They won't be able to. They are priceless and irreplaceable, those beaches. And all the marine and freshwater mammals, fish, and flora within those environs, worth more than, let's say, all the assets of BP and the rest of these murderous big oil companies. I say this event in the Gulf was a deliberate act of war against the citizens of this country and should have been treated as such, warranting the nationalization of all American assets. of all of these oil companies. The very core of their corporate culture is to make senseless windfall profits with the cost in human and environmental death, misery, and trashing merely the cost of doing business. It is clear they are willing to take any risk necessary in order to reap those profits. The death toll now being 12, including the suicide, they should be hauled up before a citizen tribunal because our government has obviously been incapacitated, tried and punished. This will be the only way these bastards will learn to tread more carefully, pulling up from the earth that which actually belongs to all of us. Yeah, they're not going to stop. Nothing's going to stop. There's no power on earth that can stop them. If there was a power that would stop, it's way too late. You see, it's way too late. Capitalism and corporatism has utterly and absolutely got every single nation and all people of these nations firmly in the death grip of this putrid, decaying death system, economic system, capitalism. As long as capitalism exists, this is going to happen. It's just that simple. And you brain-dead right-wingers, don't bother writing to me. I mean, really, you don't have a clue as to what's being discussed or what we're talking about in this program.
Well, Mike, well, you don't like capitalism, why don't you move to Cuba?
Jesus Christ. But it looks like we're stuck in it. Tom and Joshua, well, we got a break here. I'll read it to you when we come back. We got a couple more emails. And I've got another website for you from Renee Louise that I want to share with you. So get your pens and pencils ready. Okay? And I'll share it with you when we come back. And my good friend Will Pitt has a piece out today that just begs to be shared with you on the air. So I think we're going to do that. And we're going to take some phone calls tonight. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
I can't walk on water. My mother cared for me because I'm her only daughter. And you think I'm tall, but that's the shoes upon my feet. Things don't come easy.
With the truth. It's more Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. Tom writes under the subject line Smedley Butler Brigade. I guess most of you listening to this program know who Smedley Butler was, but I mentioned earlier, you know, turn it all over to the Republicans until people finally had enough and rise up for the third time in this country and bring about the necessary change. Mike, in all respect, I think you're being far too optimistic regarding the uprising of the American people. America is, after all, nothing but a mindset whose foundation valued freedom for all and over all. Now we value discounts and freebies over freedom itself. There is neither the will nor the wherewithal to stand against the machine. We are being exterminated, liquidated by hunger, disease, pollution, poverty, and ignorance so that the corporations can repopulate the country with millions of illiterate non-English-speaking people who have never heard the term democracy. The only possibility is an interim takeover by a General Smedley Butler Brigade and a government of educated, liberal, selfless civil service put into functional operation. I think a general civilian strike might bring that about, but I doubt any of that will ever happen. This country is dead and dying. It's over. Everything from this point on is simply chatter while standing in line for the showers kindly provided by Xi. Tom. Well, there's an awful lot of us, including Tom, I'm sure, who, you know, we may write and talk about this horribly depressing scenario of this country's immediate future, but when push comes to head cracking, there's an awful lot of us who are simply not going to just lie down. An awful lot. So we'll see. Renee Louise, you got your pencil, your writing instrument? Renee Louise sent this to me. Mike, there's a wonderful effort being made by the U.S. Social Forum this week to build the essential bridge necessary to effectively connect single-issue grassroots movements together as one united movement. Aside from Democracy Now!, Amy Goodman's program, this event has received no media coverage. Of course not. Why should it? It has to do with socialism. It is crucial for people to hear about efforts such as the U.S. Social Forum. Events such as this is where true hope lies. Mike, I would greatly appreciate it if you had mentioned the U.S. Social Forum on your program and help bring some much-needed attention or recognition to the wonderful effort being made by some courageous members of We the People. All right, their website is USSF, U.S. Social Forum is what that stands for, USSF, 2010.org. Okay, USSF, 2010.org. And I went to it today. The website is a lot of organizing stuff and events that are occurring. It's being held in Detroit, by the way. I bet you Peter Werby's there. We ought to get a hold of him tomorrow. Our friend Harlan is there. Yeah, we ought to get a hold of Peter tomorrow. See if we can get him on the program in Detroit. When we come back, I just have to share this piece with you that Will Pitt wrote. I guess he's been too busy to call the program. Remember, he used to call all the time. Remember back in the day? That seems like a different lifetime when we got together in D.C. for the first big, huge, monster anti-war Iraq march. When was it? 2002. December 2002, I think. Wasn't it? Oh, my God, 8 years ago. Who was used to be our Massachusetts Matt? Yeah, what was Matt's? MatCom. That was the name he used at Democratic Underground. I wonder how those people are doing. Obviously, Will is doing fine. I read his stuff all the time. I wonder how Matt's doing. And, of course, Ben Birch, who's still clunking along. I think Ben is still working for the man. Probably planting programs into systems that eventually will devour the operating systems of these great, big, nasty-ass corporations. All right, break. We'll be back. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy.
to practice your synchronized screaming. It's Mike Malloy.
Five before the hour. Okay, listen up. Will Pitt. These empty spaces is what he calls it. He says, my purpose in this life is to chronicle the events of our time, to shine a light on events and actions that damage us all, to reveal good works whenever they actually happen, and when possible, to show people places and times where they can make a difference should they choose to get involved. In the 10 years I've been at it, I have seen everything. Wars and rumors of wars, economic collapse and environmental calamity, state-sanctioned murder and torture and rape, theft, graft, fraud, deception, and greed, vast and dense enough to bend light. I've also seen millions upon millions of people pour into the streets to raise their voices as one against all these terrible things. I've seen people hurl themselves into political campaigns that have no hope of succeeding because they believed in the candidates, because the campaign message mattered as much as winning and was made of so much truth that it required their labor. I've seen previously disconnected people get plugged in somewhere, anywhere, because they could no longer abide the silence of the sidelines. I've seen a man, a veteran of the ongoing Iraq War, walk past me on the street on two prosthetic legs. I've looked into the eyes of too many people whose futures were charred to ash by the flagrant criminality that continues on Wall Street even to this very moment. I've watched helplessly as friends lost their jobs, their homes, and their hopes. I've seen people rise above all this, and I have seen people subsumed by it. In 2006, I watched as the George W. Bush Big Top Circus finally crashed and burned under the weight of its own incalculable wretchedness. The American people finally stopped buying what he and his people were selling, and on one memorable November night, I watched as those people removed what had been total congressional power from the Republicans and handed to the Democrats. And then I watched as those Democrats failed to do anything even remotely close to stopping the wars, as they failed to thwart the noxious aspirations of the Bush administration, failed to properly investigate and expose the crimes of that administration, failed to impeach, failed to do anything but enjoy the new offices they got for holding majority power. In 2008, I watched history unfold. The Democrats expanded their control in Congress, and more importantly, a black man and a white woman grappled for the White House against a demonstrably unfit Republican from Arizona, a man whose final epitaph will someday credit him for further poisoning our political culture by elevating Sarah Palin to national prominence. On the night Barack Obama sealed his victory in the general election, the reaction across the country was two-thirds jubilation and one-third doomed dismay. In Boston, thousands of people took to the streets beating drums and banging pots as they shouted with joy, while others made hasty arrangements to buy as many guns as possible. And that January, the world watched as the United States shrugged off two centuries of rancid history by inaugurating a president who just 50 years earlier would have been required to use a separate water fountain if he wanted to quench his thirst. I was not lured into believing the 2008 presidential election was going to mark the beginning of a sea change in American politics. I approached politics and politicians with one simple rule in mind. If I have heard of a politician, count on that politician being deeply and perhaps irredeemably compromised. In order to achieve the kind of notoriety and financing required to be successful in politics, politicians have to sign their names on a number of dotted lines that are not in any way in the best interest of the people. There are exceptions to this, of course. Senator Paul Wellstone was one, and Representative Dennis Kucinich is another. But for the most part, a politician who has reached the lofty heights of genuine power and influence does so by donating themselves to the crooked interests that donated to them on the way up. President Obama is no different. He took money from BP, which is killing the Gulf as we speak. He took money from the big banks and investment houses that raped our future, even as they laughed their way into massive and undeserved bonuses. He is a creature, Obama is, of the defense industry, just like every president before him, going back to Truman. He's an American politician who reached the highest possible position, and I knew going in that he would be, in the main, another compromise disappointment. Better, but not by much. I thought I was prepared for this, but a year and a half into this brave new world, I feel, I don't know exactly what I, but I'm glad Obama is the president. I'm glad McCain is not. I'm glad the derangement of Republican rule has been upended. I am pleased with the number of policy initiatives that have been undertaken, and yet there are these empty spaces in my mind and heart that actually literally ache. A few things are better, a lot of things are worse, and most things remain exactly the same. I knew it would be like this, but still the emptiness is there. My role is to chronicle these times. During all the years I've done so, I've been clinging to a belief that has managed to sustain me even on the darkest of days, a belief that has always filled some of the emptiness. It's a belief I fear our president has allowed himself to forget amid the cacophony of corporate power, military mayhem, and runaway greed, which binds him to a familiar course that, if left unchecked, will come to be the end of us all. This belief is simple. America is an idea. We have borders, roads, cities, farms, armies, but that is not America. The idea that is America was forged in the crucible of Europe when kings could mandate a state religion and incarcerate or kill whoever disagreed, when rights only existed if the powerful deemed them so. The idea that is America was forged upon the premise that these things were wrong on their face, that people are endowed with rights that cannot be taken away by fiat. At no time in history had any nation premised its existence on the bedrock truth that all of us are created equal until the founders did so in Philadelphia. And in doing so, they created a self-improving process of national growth and redemption that functions through the will of the people alone. We are an idea, and all of us are bound to it through the ink that explains us on old pieces of parchment. We are an idea, and in that idea we can locate our nobility, our strength, and the better angels of our nature. Too many of us, including our president and congressional representatives, have forgotten this. Perhaps if we remind them in strong enough terms, if we make we the people a true force for right instead of a catchphrase, things would get better. Until then, the idea that is America will continue to wither, and the empty spaces within will endure, will pit. Of course, to be completely accurate, as a friend points out, that last line should read, until then, the idea that is America has withered and died, and the empty spaces within will endure. All right, Will. Thanks for writing. Let's take some phone calls. You want to do that? Yeah, open the phone lines. The number here is 877-996-2556. What's this deal? This collection of Schweinhunds called WorldNet Daily. You've ever gone to their website? Oh my God! What a circle jerk of morons and maniacs and mouth breathers! I mean, it really is. But they had a breaking exclusive this morning that President Obama may have caused the BP oil spill by dissing Israel. That's right. Quoting the biblical prophecies of Carl Gulps, a talk radio host and Baptist pastor in Florida, WorldNet Daily reports, April the 19th, Israel celebrates its independence in 2010. Gallup says in a narration on the video, on April the 19th, Fox News reports that the U.S. will no longer automatically support Israel in the United States. The next day, on April the 20th, the Deepwater Horizon oil rig explodes. Coincidence? Or the hand and judgment of God? WorldNet Daily notes seriously that Reverend Gallops isn't the only expert who thinks that America might be under a curse from God. Referring to the Gulf spill, which Gallops claims could eventually reach all the way to Europe, the 80-year-old biblical expert and Christian Zionist Hal Lindsey, you know who he is, tells WorldNet Daily, quote, "I believe this is evidence that when you turn your back on Israel, especially when you've been a supporter, you're going to see judgments come from God." See, I wondered where these freaks were. I guess Pat Robertson and the rest of his ilk are becoming too senile to do this. But anyway, Gallops and Lindsey are clearly not the first to suggest that the oil spill was indirectly caused by the Obama administration rather than, say, oil company incompetence. The environmental disaster has spawned all sorts of conspiracy theories. Rush Limbaugh famously blamed environmentalists for causing the spill as part of their campaign to end deep water drilling. But it's these stories about God that always intrigue me. Just a little bit more here from these subhumans at WorldNet Daily. What a collection of, I don't know what these people who go to WorldNet Daily or what's the other one, FreeRepublic.com. I don't know. They're a different species. So they're saying that... That the reason this disaster occurred is because God is pissed off because Barack Obama, of course, turned his back on Israel the day after they celebrated their whatever-th anniversary. And they go on to say all this, of course, was predicted in Revelation. Anyway, the person that sent this to me, Dot in Seattle, writes, "It's always interesting to hear this kind of stuff coming from WorldNet Daily. The conservative news site does tend to run lots of stories like European Antichrist looking more and more unlikely, alongside its attempts to prove that Obama is not an American citizen." But unlike Limbaugh and the other BP conspiracy theorists out there, WorldNet Daily actually claims to be a legitimate news outlet and the largest English-language internet news site in the world. It even has a White House correspondent. Mike, why are people so effing stupid? I don't understand. Dot in Seattle. Now, didn't I get into it with one of those WorldNet Daily freak women at, what was that program CNN used to do? Remember that? They do it in the atrium of the building downtown Atlanta. Talkback Live, yeah. And they had some creepy nutball on from WorldNet Daily and me and... It was quite an experience. But there's World Net Daily. Yeah, they belong in a world net. They really do. Oh, my God. Okay, Chris is in Albuquerque listening on Sirius. Hey, Chris.
Hey, Mike. Let me go get off speaker again.
Okay.
There we go.
Okay.
I'm always surprised when Kathy actually lets me through. I have good friends who aren't as friendly as she is.
Oh, yeah? Okay.
WorldNet Daily's not the only nut job doing that.
No, of course not.
What is it? Overman's worst person in the world is some... Why are we not surprised? Some preacher down south mm-hmm. again, why are we not surprised?
Right.
Who is maintaining the same thing. The problem with it is that his dates are off, and the leak started weeks before,
right.
and it wasn't the quite right right date for how he built his case.
Right.
So, you know. Anyway.
Well, facts and the truth have never gotten in the way of these right-wing trolls. It just doesn't happen, you know. But anyway, the real reason you called...
One is I sure am going to miss Marge.
Yeah.
That made me sad. I don't envy RJ. It wasn't until my mom died that I understood the expression in books that I'd read that he felt like he'd been gutted like a fish.
Yeah, it's the only person on earth who ever accepts you for what you are is one's mother, and
yeah.
When she goes, you're on your own, truly on your own.
That is true. I mean, it was terrible when my dad died. I'm 61, so both my parents died, but
mm-hmm.
it wasn't like when my mom died. It was the whole. That I still occasionally will hear something or read something and say to myself, I gotta call mom, that'll crack her up.
Yeah.
Then I remember, no, you can't do that. The other reason I called was the oil thing. It occurred to me, Rachel did a thing. Mm-hmm. Malloy did a thing. Apparently, there's 3,600 wells in the Gulf, and I can't remember the word now. The stopping of the working on the drills applies to 33 of them.
The moratorium.
Moratorium. Thank you.
Sure.
Applies to 33 of them.
Uh-huh.
Something less than 1%, way less than 1%. They're just, I don't know what they're talking about.
No,
and also,
go ahead.
Also, part of the deal that Obama got was $100 million. To cover the people who were unemployed by the moratorium. That reason is all nonsense. It occurs to me, though, that apparently it's going to be a bad hurricane system. That's what NOAA says. It's not unusual for one to go through the Gulf and then wander up north after having picked up some speed, north being overland,
mm-hmm.
and also some water and moisture from the Gulf.
Yeah, it's we're flat out of time here. It's going to be horrible. I heard today that the water temperature in certain parts of the Gulf now is at 90 degrees. 90 degrees. That's like a huge engine for any sort of tropical storm that starts to form. There are bad days coming. Thanks, Chris. We'll be back after the break. Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. Welcome back. It is 7 past the hour, the Molloy Show. Back to your phone calls in just a second. I got an email from GM. Okay. I wish you people would just sign a name. Mike, there's a funny kind of consolation in BP and the other oil companies destroying the earth so they can make their millions. In the end, after they've done their damage, all those millions won't help them. They will be stuck here on this dying planet with no place to run. Yeah, you know, that's the part I can't understand. I really can't. When scientific evidence is produced, for example, evidence based on, among other things, core samples of ice taken at both poles that is ice laid down hundreds of thousands of years ago. And when there is a literal history that can be scientifically analyzed. And from that part of history, as captured in deep ice cores, to just all sorts of measurements. When the science is processed, and the bottom line of the science is, oh my God, the planet is heating up. And then a second determination is made that the planet is heating up in a greater a far greater speed due to, even though the heating and cooling planet, of course, is cyclical, but it's heating up at a rate that can only be explained by the dumping of heat-trapping gases into the atmosphere. When all of this is laid down for people to read, for governments and scientists and common folk like you and me, one would think, if one lived in a rational world or a sane world, that the entire globe would take notice of that and say, wow, okay, what are we going to do? If people could look at what is happening, if the leadership of this planet could look at what is happening, for example, with the fishing stock in the oceans, with the huge, monstrous, nearly island-sized flows of garbage and death and pollution that is in the oceans now, if people could look at the tissue of top of the line predators in the oceans and find out that they're carrying 1,000 times the safe level of mercury in their body fat as a result, just one of the chemicals, as a result of what we have dumped into the oceans. If people could take a look at melting glaciers, you know, 10,000, 15,000 feet up in the air and all of this stuff and just say, you know what? We have a major, major problem. And we've got to stop it if we want to survive. Now, I understand that the acid that goes into that mix is this religious insanity. The religious insanity that is so extant on this planet and is just so horrifying. That we have, out of a population of 6 billion, we probably have a global population of 4 or 5 billion who honestly believe that there are spooks wandering around in the sky and doing things. And we have all these prophecies. And it's horrifying. And wouldn't one think that after millennia of warfare and the realization that in the end, the only thing that's left is dead people and destroyed environments and busted villages or cities or jungles or whatever. All of this empirical evidence that's right in front of us that says, look, here are some things you shouldn't do. And if you are doing them, you must stop. Is it irrational then to think that sentient human beings like us could take a look at this stuff and say, you know, yeah, we got to stop. We got to make some changes. we have to change the way we think and relate to each other and relate to the planet. We've got to. It's not a choice any longer. It's a great big got to. That's the part I don't get. That's the part I just don't understand. So religious nuttery is trumping the hard physical science of where we are and where we're going to wind up. And the horrible part to me, the really horrible part, because it involves irony on a level that is just galactic. And that irony is, if there were a frame of reference millisecond, immediately after death, now you're going to disagree with this, a lot of you are, but if there were a reference point where someone dies and they have a second to, you know, stand there with their arms out ready to be embraced by Allah or Yahweh or Jehovah or some spook on the wheel of birth and death or whatever. And instead of that, instead of all this bull crap that has been fed, there is that moment where one sees the abyss, the nothingness. And then click, it all goes out. That to me is the monstrous irony. I say monstrous because after all that the human species has tried in order to educate itself, there have been some geniuses, Copernicus, Galileo. I mean, just start wherever you want to start. And they presented evidence that should cast religious nuttery into some dustbin someplace where we can all go take a look at it once in a while and say, oh my God, people really believe that there was this whole tribe of gods and goddesses that lived on Mount Olympus. You're kidding, really? You know, like we do now. And we find it very entertaining, don't we? Oh, wow. All these gods and goddesses, and they used to do all this stuff, interfering in the lives of men and women. And blah, 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 blah. That's the part to me that is so incredibly frustrating. That we have the ability, we have the power, the intellect, to turn everything around and make it good. You know, but to my way of thinking, the first requirement is to boil religion in its own fat and just murder it. Murder all religion. Just kill it. Get rid of it. It is such an evil, evil force. Ah. And do away with the tyrants. Do away with the greed. Do away with, in other words, do away with capitalism. You know, get rid of religion and capitalism. Just kill it, murder it, destroy it. And as an act of survival, as an act of self-survival, if nothing else, but as an act of species survival. I mean, what has capitalism and or religion done except destroy and butcher and murder and lead us to where we are now? Oh my God. Why is that so hard to see? I don't get it. I don't get it. We'll be back with your phone calls right after this break.
Are you ever leaving Mississippi?
to Mike Malloy.
It is 21 past the hour. Ann is calling from Madison, Wisconsin, listening on the mic, 92.1. Hey, Ann.
Hi, Michael. I was on the point of calling last night to ask Kathy what she'd heard from Marge.
Mm.
And I had a store errand that got me in about 45 minutes into the first hour of the program tonight. So I was very sad.
Yeah.
I have a couple things I don't know if you noticed the other day if you were watching C-SPAN, but Petraeus fainted. He was at a committee. And he just passed out for a couple minutes. And I noticed yesterday, as he was standing alongside the Prez in the Rose Garden, that he did not have a military bearing whatsoever. He was quite slumped. This leads me to think that he may not be in the best of health. He may have a heart condition. This is good news, isn't it?
Well, I know you're being ironic. It's probably not very good news at all.
And
the situation, I think, with Petraeus, you know, some people are certainly built to stand, or absorb or whatever the absolute, anti-life, position that one enters into when one gets involved.
Oh, it would be wonderful to think that he's tired of being the muscle for corporate greed.
Right. I would imagine, though, that he's getting tired of doing what he's been doing for a very long career, and that is war fighting or war planning or war execution or whatever you want to call it. As far as what might happen to him, I wouldn't even hazard a guess. A lot of these guys, these generals, you know, live to a ripe old age. I don't know why, but you're right. Petraeus looks, he did look frail. He did look,
Yes, he does. And there's another thing. I hate to admit it, but I was listening to Coast last night, and George Norrie was boasting that he had something that no other news source was covering, and that was, taking it from the right, that the Iranians are massing on their northwest border, which ties into that, what was it, IsraelNewsService.com story that you read last night?
Right.
And that's right on the border with Azerbaijan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
please tell me that we wouldn't be stupid enough with the disaster in the Gulf to start picking a fight with the Iranians. Please tell me we're not that dumb.
Well, I can't, Ann, because the people that set foreign policy in the United States don't set it for the benefit of the American people. They set it for the benefit of corporate America and for capitalism. It's pretty much always been that way. It certainly started that way right around the end of the 19th century and the beginning of the 20th with the Spanish-American War. This is what Smedley Butler wrote about, war's a racket. You ought to look that up sometime on the Internet. War is a racket. But no, I can't tell you that at all. I would not be the least bit surprised. Iran has a lot of oil. Iran is a threat to Israel. We will do anything for Israel. Because our country is run by religious crazy people who think that if we turn our back on Israel, the big sky spook is going to get so pissed off that he might send down balls of fire to end everything. So I wish I certainly do wish I could tell you that we're not that stupid. But the sad fact is, Ann, we are that stupid. Plus, we are that stupid to the fifth or sixth power. We are that stupid to the point where we have to use logarithms to come up with a numerical representation of how stupid we are in this country. whether it is on a leadership basis or just us common folk. Of course we're stupid. If we were not stupid, we wouldn't be in this situation or anything close to it. All right, we have a break. We'll come back in a minute or two and take your call. All right? Phone number here, if you want to check in, 877-996-2556. I'm Mike Malloy. Stay with us. This is from Teresa in Spring, Texas, who writes, well, she sent me this little news item. The tropical wave, this is a weather report, really, tropical depression could form in the Caribbean. It says the tropical wave over the Western Caribbean, or Caribbean, however you say it. Back there, there goes our get rid of that mini disc player. It is 10 before the hour. Thanks to our crew, Sharon Gordy, our military affairs correspondent, Bruce Enberg, economics, Kate Petrini, education, Bob Alexander, and Bridget Wolf, the ethics advisors of the program, and Kathy Bay, who's also the executive producer and engineer of the program. Mary is in early Iowa listening on Sirius. Hey, Mary.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, I read, do you want me to tell you what I think?
I certainly do.
Well, it might not be much, but I believe that, well, you know, I read Naomi Klein's Shock Doctrine, where we destroyed the countries of South and Central America financially and militarily,
right,
or else we just killed them. I believe that that's what's happening to our country. And when I didn't believe in the war, and when we went in, I said, well, I hope that Bush and Cheney don't decide to democratize the United States, which of course I believe they have. And I believe that the military has taken over. And I believe that when, after McChrystal talked to the president, he went in and talked to the others, Gates and the rest of them, and they told him what to do. And I believe we've been taken over by the military-industrial complex, and I don't know how we'll get out of it. And I just wake up each morning and tell myself there's been a military coup, and then everything makes sense.
Well, you're probably right, and let's not get lost in all this madness of the past 48 hours. Hillary Clinton, when this story broke in Rolling Stone, Hillary Clinton made it very clear that she was a big fan of McChrystal's. And
oh yes, that's why I wouldn't vote for her. I was delegate to our county convention, and we either had to vote. I wanted Joe Biden, of course. I work for him. He's the most peaceful. But they took us, they said we had to go in one room or the other and cast, it's a caucus in Iowa, and cast a vote for either, Hillary or Obama. And I stood up and I said, there was another, delegate with me, and I said, there are, under no circumstances will we vote for either Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama, and we walked out of there.
Well, that was probably a very wise move, and it's a shame that 56 million people decided not to do that and put Obama in another corporatist. Oh, well, I voted for him. Mary, thanks. I appreciate you checking in. That's the part that makes my skin crawl is the fact that I declared myself part of the problem and voted for Barack Obama instead of voting for the Green candidate or anybody else. Bill is in Orange City, California. Hey, Bill.
Hello?
Yeah, hi.
Yeah, I've been listening to you since March of 05.
Oh, my.
And when I first started listening to you, you told me, or you said you didn't see how you could ever vote for a Democrat again.
Mm-hmm.
So keeping that in mind, what do you think about third-party possibility?
Well, that's the direction I'm firmly in. I belong to that school where I don't think I can vote for a Democrat again. But when it came time to walk into the voting booth, and I saw, for example, McCain and Palin over here and, Obama and, Biden over here, I just chose the lesser of two evils and voted Democrat. I'm not going to do that again.
Seems like for those of us that are, quote, left of center, ever since McGovern in 72, it's been nothing but a lesser of two evils. You know, look what we've had to show for the last 35 years.
And don't forget, when McGovern tried to explain to the country that that Nixon was a megalomaniac, maniacal liar, and what did he win? He won his home state, Massachusetts, and I think he won D.C.
Massachusetts and his still home state of South Dakota. That was it.
And that's it. And the American public just went bananas for Tricky Dick again. That was in 72. And what happened in 74? The rat bastard almost brought the country into a horrendous constitutional crisis and had to resign. So the point I'm trying to make is that we Americans, where it concerns our political affiliations and the way we select our lawyers, we're just dumber than dirt. I mean, we really are, Bill. You know, third-party candidate, yay, let's do it. But it never happens. And why doesn't it happen? Because Americans are stupid. And we're going to continue to do this. We're going to continue to vote for the corporate party candidate, whether that person is a Democrat or Republican, until the country collapses.
Yeah, but look at, everybody talks about how great Clinton was. If Ross Perot hadn't been in 92 and 96, he wouldn't have gotten elected.
Right, that's true.
He never even, you know, he only got, what, 42-43% of the vote.
That's it. And it would have been what the original plan was, and that was to keep George Herbert Walker Bush in, because George Herbert Walker Bush was also part of the capitalist militaristic establishment, and he would have just continued the policies put in place by the Reagans. But they screwed up. They hadn't figured out how to manipulate the voting machines yet. Hey, Bill, thanks. We got to go. I appreciate you checking in. Ah. Well, I'll tell you what. You have a pleasant evening. What's left of it. I'll see you tomorrow night. I'm Mike Malloy. Take care. Keep it lit.